Ezekiel Elliott's probably one of the linchpins here. And yeah, if the defense can't account for him, it's going to be a lot of me swearing on Twitter.
Which would not be unlike any other day, but that's a different story. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Falcoholic Podcast, the official podcast of the Atlanta Falcons on the SB Nation Podcast Network. I am DW, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, the June, Petter of Dogs, first of her name, the Daenerys Targaryen of Falcons Twitter, the Quick Draw McGraw of Facebook Messenger, the Trash Talker Supreme, the one and only Touchdown Balls, she will not be bossed, Gina Madeline Thomas. Gina, how are you doing?
Well, I'm fine. I forgot that you're putting Touchdown Balls back in my into my nickname for the first time. I am surely delighted about that, to relive that whole scenario. How are you, David?
I'm good. I'm so excited to add Touchdown Balls to the nickname string at this point. Joining us today is none other than the producer at Blogging the Boys. You guys have probably seen him on Twitter. Blogging the Boys is a fantastic site for Cowboys coverage. We're talking about none other than RJ Ochoa. RJ, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Not quite the introduction that Gina got, but I'm definitely doing well. I am also first of my name, just for the record.
My name is David Walker, so there's no way in hell I was first of my name. That is as vanilla as it gets in American society. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about this upcoming game, because to be frank, Falcons fans do not want to hear Gina and I talk about the Falcons and Browns game. Obviously, we're going to pretend that didn't happen and just move on to this upcoming contest on Saturday. This is a pretty important one. Both teams, the Cowboys and the Falcons, are coming in at 4-5 and amazingly are still in the playoff race, because outside of the Rams and the Saints, it is essentially wide open. I think the Cowboys, RJ, correct me if I'm wrong here, but they're second in the NFC East at this point behind only Washington. Is that right?
That's correct, and they do have the Redskins on Thanksgiving, so this is a very, very big stretch coming up for them.
Yep, very big. And actually, both teams, both the Falcons and the Cowboys, are playing on Thanksgiving, so this game could be a huge catalyst for what we see in just a few short days after Sunday. So let's talk about this upcoming matchup and how important it is to both. And let's talk first about this Falcons offense going up against this Cowboys defense. So, RJ, I'm going to go to you here first, because obviously for Falcons listeners, they may not be as familiar with what the Cowboys are toting on defense. I took a look at the injury list for the Cowboys today. I feel like 2/3 of your roster did not participate this week. Who are some of the key names that Falcons fans need to pay attention to on Sunday for the Cowboys defense?
Well, in terms of injuries, it's really kind of isolated, and I'm using that word loosely, to the defensive line. David Irving has been banged up for some time. Randy Gregory does seem to be on his way back, so that's certainly good news. He had a great game on Sunday night in Philadelphia. Taco Charlton has also had his fair share of issues. Really, the Cowboys have been known, you know, and I think Atlanta natives will appreciate this, if they're not aware, as the Hot Boys. That's kind of what the Rush group has nicknamed themselves.
Nice.
So a lot of Hot Boys are injured entering this game. And Sean Lee actually made a petition to become a Hot Boy that was accepted. I think there was a vote. I don't know how it all went down. And he's out, you know, conceivably for this game. And he left the game in Atlanta last year early. And right. We know how that went, obviously, you know, talk about bad memories. But so you think about it, that's probably the biggest name that's absent for the Cowboys on defense. But they've got the reigning NFC Defensive Player of the Week playing linebacker for them. So amazingly, it doesn't feel like that big of a deal.
Yeah, and I think that's something that many Falcons fans may not be as familiar with. And in fairness, in the NFC South, you know, going up against Luke Kuechly two times a year, Thomas Davis. We hear a lot about the linebacker play. Obviously, Deion Jones on their own team, who potentially could be back this game, is a very, very good linebacker. But the Cowboys arguably have two very exciting young linebackers in Leighton Vander Esch and Jalen Smith. Smith obviously was taken in last year's draft, and Vander Esch was taken this year. What is your take on these two linebackers? Do you think that they're being overlooked in the conversation for best linebacking duo in the league?
It's really hard to overlook a member of the Cowboys. You know, it's such a difficult thing to have happen. But I think you're right. I mean, you know, when people think of sort of the pristine linebacking duos in the NFL, I think Carolina is up there with Thomas and Kuechly. But Jalen Smith, his story is certainly well known. His his route that he took after his horrible injury in the Fiesta Bowl, and the Cowboys taking a chance on him, and he really has made them, you know, look smart for drafting him, and essentially so has Leighton Vander Esch. You know, people really wanted to take this thing full circle here, Calvin Ridley with the 19th overall pick. And so when the Cowboys took Leighton Vander Esch, Cowboys fans everywhere said they were reaching, this was horrible, et cetera. and he has turned into he looks a lot like Thad from Blue Mountain State. And he plays like he was born out of a mountain. He is on fire. And so the two of them together ascending at this point in time is very exciting.
Yeah. Gina, you're as we look at this matchup, obviously disregarding the debacle in Cleveland from last week, the Falcons offense for the most part has been back to or close to the 2016 form of just scoring nearly at will. This Cowboys defense may be one of the bigger challenges that they've faced this year. How do you think they stack up? Do you feel like this is a game where they're going to have to lean on Matt Ryan's arm? Do they need to get the running game going? What do you feel like is the key here for the Falcons offense?
I think they're going to have to really get the run game going to balance things out. That's been a challenge for this team, even though the offense has been spectacular. And so, you know, being able to establish some kind of a ground game would certainly help open things up for the pass.
Yeah. And I do find it interesting because I think watching draft night, almost everybody thought that Calvin Ridley was a shoe-in for the Cowboys. And when they passed on him and he was sitting there for Atlanta, I don't know about you, Gina, but my initial reaction was, oh my God, this may actually happen. And this is going to be the worst possible move the Falcons could make.
Yes.
And I think in hindsight, the Cowboys got a fantastic player, but arguably the Falcons have gotten another explosive weapon next to Julio. So with that in mind, I mean, just looking back now over the past nine games, what do you think it has meant to the Cowboys, or I'm sorry, to the Falcons offense to have someone like Calvin Ridley opposite of Julio Jones to maybe draw some coverage or to take advantage of those one-on-ones that receivers often see when Julio's on the other side?
Yeah, I think that, you know, looking at the big picture of when the Falcons traded up for Julio, I think that this was what they envisioned with Roddy. And that didn't really materialize to the same degree, but Calvin Ridley is just spectacular. He's very talented. He does have some drops. That was always the knock on him, but he runs really crisp routes. You know, I think that he's just such a great addition because he has the combination of speed, athleticism, and his route running ability that forces teams to account for him. And I think his body of work so far since he's been in the league justifies that. And so when you have that situation, you know, I have seen the Panthers in particular cover Julio with a corner, like their top corner, and then safety help. And then also cheat a linebacker over there, like Luke Kuechly. I mean, we all remember the catch that Julio made over Luke Kuechly's head. And Kuechly is one of the best linebackers in this league. So I've seen them have to send three guys to account for Julio multiple times. And you can't afford to do that if Calvin Ridley's on the field too. So I think that he just opens things up for Atlanta so much. I was not thrilled about the pick when it happened because I was like, why are you drafting a receiver when we have these other needs? But at this point, I love the pick. I think that he's a great addition. Obviously, he's performed incredibly well in his rookie season. And I think that it really does make a huge difference for Julio, who's leading the league in receiving yards in large part because Calvin Ridley is also on the field.
Yeah. And RJ, I think a case can be made that where Ridley was concerned, landing somewhere like Atlanta, where he did not have to be the top receiver out of the gate, he didn't have to be wide receiver one, may have been more beneficial to him, maybe landing in Dallas, where the expectations would have been much higher for him to come in and contribute day one as a number one target or a primary target for Dak Prescott. What is your take on how all of that played out?
I certainly think that that's fair and that that makes sense. And speaking, I think, on behalf of Cowboys fans, it's kind of worked out for us to a degree. Obviously, with the trading for another Alabama wide receiver involved here in Amari Cooper. And so, if you told me right now, not knowing anything about the future, that with two first round draft picks, I could have Leighton Vander Esch and Amari Cooper or Calvin Ridley and, linebacker TBD, I'd take the former option simply because, to your point, Leighton kind of has his own Julio Jones to come in and learn from in Sean Lee,
Right.
and has the Cowboys are able to get the sort of star they need in Amari Cooper, and it's we're seeing it pay dividends for them at least two games in to the Amari Cooper era.
Yeah. And now that we're talking about the Falcons receivers and how those guys on the other side match up, what can you tell us about the corners and the safety situation for Dallas? Who are some names that Falcons fans need to pay attention to this Sunday?
Well, at corner, the Cowboys really made a move this offseason that was really important for them. They turned Byron Jones into a cornerback who'd been playing safety for them. A lot of that was spearheaded by Chris Richard, the former Seahawks defensive coordinator that came over. And Byron is playing at elite cornerback level. The only game he's really been somewhat challenged in was in Houston when he took on DeAndre Hopkins. And so I imagine that Julio Jones will have a similar effect on him. But so Byron Jones has been spectacular. The cornerback that I thought was really going to take a leap this year was Chidobe Awuzie, who the Cowboys took in the second round last year. And he had a great game in Philly. But other than that, he's just kind of been average. He changed jersey numbers from 33 to 24 this offseason. And I was like, oh man, like that's a sign. Like if you're wearing 24 as a corner, you've got to be something special. But he really hasn't shown up quite to that degree. At safety, there was all that Earl Thomas talk. That feels like forever ago.
Oh, yeah.
And the Cowboys have a second-year player in Xavier Woods who's playing really well, but their other safety, I think, for Falcons fans to know, Jeff Heath is the GOAT. If we're being honest, he's the greatest player of all time. It's a trope we have. I don't exactly know where it started, but he's the GOAT, and he just finds himself in the middle of these spectacular moments. I don't know if you guys remember last year in Oakland, he was the player that jarred the ball loose on Derek Carr that won that game for the Cowboys.
Yes, I remember that game.
He was the one who stopped Zach Ertz on fourth down in Philadelphia. I mean, he has this knack for just being around in very, very special moments. So Jeff Heath, he is the GOAT, and I will go to my grave believing.
I respect it.
Respect the hustle. We definitely. I'll tell you this. There's a good chance that you'll have a new goat after the Cowboys' offense goes up against this Falcons' defense. There's a good chance. Let's put it this way. Cleveland's quarterback went 12 for 12 at one point and finished the first half with a 158.3 passer rating. So this Cowboy or this Falcons' defense is the gift that keeps on giving. So on that note, let's talk about that matchup. Let's talk about the Cowboys offense. I know, Gina, I don't know about you. I've already finished my first glass of whiskey, so
I'm
to
on
help with the
hard seltzer
pain.
number two, so I'm prepared. I'm prepared to talk about this defense now.
Ooh, so RJ, hopefully you can tell that how that conversation is gonna go.
I'll be honest. The Cowboys aren't exactly bringing in a firework show of an offense, themselves. So I don't know that there's a reason. I understand the panic, but if you're looking to get right, this might be the week,
Well,
unfortunately.
this is probably a perfect matchup then, because the Falcons are definitely the defense that if teams are looking to get right, that's who you want to play that Sunday. Look at the Browns. The Browns are not exactly lighten up the league right now. I mean, they have tripled their win total from the previous two seasons in this season so far. So we're all very impressed, but it's the Browns. And the defense looked like a bunch of JV kids out there running around. I mean, everybody forgot how to tackle. They were just trying to strip the ball. I'm still very frustrated about this. I'm going to slow down, take a breath. Then we can talk about this matchup. Because if I start venting about the Cleveland game, we're going to be here all night.
Yeah, that is a factory of sadness that we want to avoid. But maybe, just maybe, Gene, that's RJ's point. Maybe this is the offense that gets the Falcons' defense back on point. And to that note, we do want to point out that Deion Jones has been activated. So, Gina, what can you tell us about the Falcons' young star linebacker and what you think his odds are for playing on Sunday?
I mean, the team has really missed him. Obviously, they have a ton of injuries on defense, but Deion is kind of the heart and soul of it. He's right there in the middle. He's sort of the quarterback of the defense. I believe that Marquand Manuel yesterday may have even called him the Matt Ryan of the defense. So he is, you know, he just makes such a huge difference. And it was really interesting to hear him talk about how other players reacted to having Deion back, because he said they were all inspired and they were all energized by his return. So they were not inspired or energized last week. So I think that that is definitely some progress. I will say I did talk to Quinn yesterday one-on-one about Deion, and I would put his chances of playing right around 50-50 and maybe even like 51-49 leaning toward not playing, because it is a short week to prepare for the Saints. Deion Jones is the great destructor of the Saints defense. He has just had a phenomenal, even in his brief career, has been phenomenal against them. Pick six against Drew Brees in his very first game against the Saints, you know, and he has played up to that level every time that he has faced them. And so I could see that the team would want to go ahead and keep him inactive for Sunday, you know, let the defense hopefully not look like a bunch of idiots for a change, and then play him against the Saints. Because if I were Quinn, I would think, you know, the Saints game in the division is a more of a must-win game. They're all really must-win games at this point for both of our teams. But the Saints, because it's the Saints, because it's in division, that one's definitely, because it's on Thanksgiving, definitely a bigger game. And so I could see that they would just keep him out this week, let him ease into this with another week of practice, and then play the Saints. So
yeah, that's, you bring up, those are my something, two cents. You bring up something really interesting that just occurred to me. Both the Falcons and the Cowboys, with their Thanksgiving Day games, are playing a division rival. And it really adds an interesting dynamic to Sunday's game, because obviously winning the division, or at least taking care of a rival within the division, can go a long way towards getting you to the playoffs. RJ, do you think there's any chance that these teams will potentially, to Gina's point, rest guys maybe that are just on the cusp and that they want to keep healthy for that division game? Or do you think this is a game where they have to go all out and guys who can play will play?
I think this is a really fascinating wrinkle, because to the kind of where we started here, you know, I think maybe either team is feeling, you know, if you're the Cowboys, well, this could be the defense that, you know, we get by against. And the Falcons thinking, well, this could be the offense that we get by against. And, you know, to your point, you know, both thinking, let's get ready for the game that matters just a hair more. You know, the Cowboys, I don't think, have a situation like Deion Jones. I mean, they've sort of already made their decision when it comes to Sean Lee, for example, which has been made easier by Leighton Vander. So I don't think they have a decision as difficult to make like that. But if they did, I think I would lean the direction that you're kind of describing, like, man, let's just kind of cross our fingers and hope we beat the Cowboys, because we're going to need that Saints game. I think that maybe this game is just a hair more important for the Falcons, and I really hate to say that, because the Falcons are, if they're going to be a playoff team, in my estimation, it has to be as a wild card because of what New Orleans is doing.
Very true.
Whereas the Cowboys, they can still win this division with 8 wins if it comes down to that. So I think that, you know, maybe Atlanta, you know, I don't know that there's as much of a difference between the Dallas and New Orleans game for Atlanta as there is the Atlanta and Washington games for the Cowboys.
Very good point. Excellent point. So redirecting back to this Cowboys offense, want to get your thoughts on the addition of Amari Cooper. You hinted at it earlier. Obviously, it was a big, big move right before the trade deadline. A lot of people, it got people talking about the Raiders again, which it seems like the only time people talk about the Raiders is when they do something stupid. So what are your thoughts on Amari Cooper? Has he lived up so far to what you would want to see out of him? Or do you feel like this is more of a long-term play for the Cowboys?
Well, I think, first of all, you never are pleased with giving up something like a first-round draft pick. And, you know, every time you think about it, it sucks, no matter what. And so that's the first thing. But overall, I think I'm inordinately pleased with Amari Cooper. You know, Dak Prescott's most accurate game of the season from a completion percentage standpoint was immediately the game against the Titans, Amari's debut, to which he was more accurate on Sunday in Philadelphia. So his two most accurate games have been with Amari Cooper on the field. You know, Dak's completion percentage to his top five targets, Allen Hurns, Michael Gallup, Cole Beasley, Jeff Swaim, Zeke Elliott, have all improved since Amari Cooper joined the Cowboys. And I think that that's really, really telling and really big. You know, Amari was brought in, I think, to kind of not reinvigorate this offense, but they clearly needed that role. They clearly needed that presence to open things up for everybody else. And I think we're seeing the fruits of that labor. You know, Allen Hurns had a huge third down conversion in Philadelphia that probably doesn't happen if Amari Cooper isn't on the field. And so I think overall, you know, you see him, he himself had a huge third down conversion where he bounced off a defender against the Eagles and, you know, proceeded to pick up the chains. But from what we've seen on the field all around him, I'm a 10 out of 10 pleased with Amari.
Awesome. Gina, as we look back, the last time the Cowboys played the Falcons, it was the infamous Adrian Claiborne game. As you may remember, where he single-handedly destroyed the souls of the Cowboys' offensive line. What was it? Three or four sacks in one game?
It was six.
It was six.
It was six. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I completely.
It was six. I wrote about it for SB Nation, so I remember vividly.
Yeah, it was. I guess the key point here is there is not an Adrian Claiborne on the Falcons roster this year.
And actually, there is not a pass rush on the Falcons roster either. So,
and you could probably link the two things. Obviously, you know, the Cowboys offensive line has had a reputation that this year, maybe due to some injuries, has not been the reality as much as it has been in the past. So as we look at this defensive front for the Falcons, Jarrett, Sanat, Shelby, Reed, Tack, Beasley, how important do you think it is for these guys to get it going from a pass rush standpoint to be able to keep this game in check, to at least keep it close between these two clubs?
Yeah, I think that is fundamentally important. And, you know, I do just want to say, as much as I love Adrian Claiborne and as fun as that game was for him, Tyron Smith is the best left tackle in the league, period. Yep. Like, there's no argument to the contrary. And so it wasn't surprising because you had a lot of factors at work there. Like, Tyron's been a fixture there, and then he was injured, and so when you sub somebody else in, especially at the left tackle position, you're dealing with some chemistry issues, communication, all those kinds of things. And so Clay was able to really take advantage of that. I do think Zach Smith and Tyron Smith both returned to practice today. So I think they'll both play. I don't think that you'll find any weaknesses on the Dallas offensive line that the Falcons pass rush is actually equipped to take advantage of, because it's been really bad. And so if you're hoping for a repeat performance against the Cowboys with somebody magically stepping up and getting six sacks, I do not anticipate that happening. This is a much tougher matchup this time around. And, you know, the pass rush is abysmally poor. So
it makes me so sad.
It's a perfect storm of not setting up to be a good day for the Falcons pass rush.
Yeah. Well, which is not unlike any other day that ends in a Y. So
correct. Yeah. I'm just asking you to temper your expectations because it's been bad. It's still going to be bad. So let's all just embrace the darkness.
We are all living in the dark timeline, and unfortunately, that means the Falcons' pass rush will never come alive. Which may be good news for RJ and for Dak Prescott. One last key point, and that is a name that amazingly has we haven't even brought up to this point, and that's Ezekiel Elliott, who is still one of the best running backs in the league. And again, you know, it's kind of crazy we're talking about this matchup, and we haven't talked about this key cog in the Cowboys offense. So RJ, what is the story with Elliott this year? Obviously the Cowboys offense has not been as dynamic as it has been in past years. Has Elliott been a factor in that, or is he still producing and it's the rest of the offense around him that has struggled?
Well, I think that Zeke is, he's second in the NFL in rushing right now behind only Todd Gurley. And, mm-hmm. He hasn't played as many games as Gurley, to be fair. To your point, it kind of feels like he's really doing nothing special, but he's second in the league in rushing. I mean, that's Zeke, on a quiet note. And, Gina mentioned that the Tyron Smith missed that game last season, obviously, in Atlanta. That was the first game of Zeke's suspension when the Cowboys traveled to take on the last year. So Zeke's obviously great in pass protection as well, which is part of what all that was. But the Cowboys really had the rug pulled out from under them because Sean Lee left that game early as well. And, you can make an argument, at least at that time, that those were their three most important players. And so they've got that kind of back in tow this season, getting ready to take on the Falcons this time around. And Zeke, I think, you look at what the Cowboys did with him in Philadelphia, and they really kind of finally got back. They had a drive at the end, their final touchdown of the game, that really felt like 2016 Cowboys, the season where we should have hosted the Falcons in the NFC Championship game. But, whatever. Nobody's bitter. Zeke was fantastic. I mean, he had the hurdle that the whole world saw. The Cowboys finally utilized him in the passing game. He had 151 rushing yards. I mean, he was all over the place. And, the Cowboys, I think, benefit from having Amari Cooper in that respect as well. Amari opens up everybody, which allows Zeke to do his thing. I think that Zeke's finally got an offensive line that's really clicking this season. The Cowboys fired their offensive line coach a few weeks ago and promoted Mark Colombo, who's a former offensive lineman for them. And I don't mean to speak ill about a player, but they've been playing with a rookie at left guard in Connor Williams, mm-hmm. and he got hurt. He had a knee scope going on. So the Cowboys started Xavier Suafilo at left guard last week, and call it Xavier's presence, call it Mark Colombo's effect finally taking hold. But everything finally crystallized for Zeke in the run game. And I think that that's where the Cowboys are right now, which at least for now gives us a little bit of confidence.
Yeah. And against this Falcons defense should give you a ton of confidence. So yeah. With that, let's all talk about the one player that we think fans need to pay special attention to on Sunday. So, Gene, I'm going to go to you first. What's the one name you think fans need to pay attention to that could have a big impact on this game?
Oh, man. I'm probably going to go ahead and say Ezekiel Elliott. Actually, the defense last week was a disaster. They gave up over 200 yards rushing. It was just embarrassing. Mm-hmm. And so if they can't contain Ezekiel Elliott, who's really adept as a runner, obviously, but also as a receiver, they're going to be in trouble. So I'm going to say, Ezekiel Elliott's probably one of the linchpins here. And yeah, if the defense can't account for him, it's going to be a lot of me swearing on Twitter.
Which would not be unlike any other day, but that's a different story.
Yes. Zeke, of course, went to the Ohio State University. So he's one of the players that I usually root for to succeed. I like to throw that out every week, like which Buckeyes players were playing. Everyone is really tired of me yelling about the Ohio State University, but I'm not going to stop. So
I swear to God, you better not do that with the Saints, Gina.
I hope that he's well. The Saints have so many. It's not my fault. Blame Sean Payton. Blame the Saints. It's always their fault. Anyway, I root for Zeke every week except for when they play the Falcons. I hope that he has a bad week this week. I'm sorry. My most sincere apologies.
There you have it, RJ. Who is the one name you think fans should pay special attention to on Sunday?
I think that Zeke is certainly a worthy nominee. I mentioned him earlier. I'm going to go with Byron Jones. Byron has been one of the superstars of the Cowboys defense so far this season, really taking a leap under Chris Richard. And he is the Cowboys' sort of lone hope at stopping and mitigating Julio Jones. And I think sort of a cousin of that would be Chidobe Awuzie, the Cowboys' other cornerback, because it's going to be up to him to slow down Calvin Ridley, which is a very, very difficult thing to do because Byron's going to give his best efforts on the Julio front. But Byron is extremely rangy. He's extremely athletic. You might remember 3 years ago, he set the record at the combine for the long jump. Mm-hmm. He is a freak. And so I think he is definitely somebody that hopefully you're not hearing a lot about because he's getting his job done.
Yeah. For me, I think it's going to come down to a name that Falcons fans are very familiar with, and that's Grady Jarrett. If the Falcons are going to have success in stopping the run, it almost always seems to lean on the big man in the middle. When he is in there, this is a different defense against the run. They shut down Washington when they were in a few weeks ago. He is arguably the best defensive player the Falcons have right now, and arguably is the most important defender we have, even with Deion Jones coming back, because he is arguably the only real stalwart pass rusher and run defender on that defensive line. So really need a big game out of him if they're going to slow down this Cowboys offense at all. So with that said, we've come to the time for predictions. And this is going to be fun. This is, I think, a very intriguing game. Both teams, 4-5, they need this win, arguably to stay in the playoffs. And I've just realized, I think I said arguably about 45 times in the past 2 minutes. So, Gina, I apologize for that.
I'm not editing you on this podcast, David. I would trim it down if it were something that you wrote. But you're speaking, it's okay.
It's the whiskey speaking, honestly.
Live your life, David. Live your life.
It's the alcoholic version of the Falcoholic podcast. So our predictions for the game, very important one for the Falcons, an important one for the Cowboys. RJ, I'm going to go to you first. How do you see this one playing out on Sunday?
Well, I live in San Antonio, Texas. And so as a result, when the Super Bowl was here a few years ago, I was fortunate enough. My dad and I went to that game. So that's the only Falcons game I've ever been to. I was Super Bowl 51. And, you know, my dad and I are actually traveling to this game. I didn't mean to just sort of dance on old wounds, by the way.
That's okay. We're used to it. It's fine.
We're numb.
My dad and I are actually going to this game. We're really excited. We do a road game every year. We really wanted to see this stadium. And so I'm sort of riding the momentum of my own luck at Falcons games. And I think the Cowboys maybe have figured out a formula that I trust to just a 51% degree. I really do think the Cowboys pick up a win here. It's not like an ugly sort of game. And I really believe there will be a flukish sort of play, you know, something everyone's moaning about on Monday, a call or a challenge that went one way. I think we're talking something like 27-26 Cowboys. That's how I'm
feeling. Wow. Yeah, I could definitely see that happening.
Yeah,
Gina,
me too.
How do you see this one playing out?
Well, first of all, I want to say that right at the moment that you said this is the alcoholic version of the Falcoholic podcast, I spilled hard seltzer all over my shirt. So that was fitting and appropriate. Honestly, I can't disagree with anything that RJ just said. I think that everything that he said is going to hold true. I think that there will be some call that we're all just up in arms about the next day. I think that it will be a close, hard-fought game. I think the Falcons will give up a lot more points than we want them to. And I do think that this Falcons team has played so well at home that that does make a difference. And let's not forget that Cleveland is very close to Pennsylvania, okay? We all know that Matt Ryan can't play in Pennsylvania. I think that it may have transitive properties and is now impacting Cleveland. So I'm just going to blame that loss on that. And I do think the Falcons pull this one off. I think that it's going to be close. I'm probably, again, going to be swearing a lot on Twitter. And I think that it will wrap up 27-24 game-winning field goal from either Giorgio Tavecchio or Matt Bryant, who did practice today. So, yeah, that's what I think. I think it's going to come down to a field goal. One of those two will win it for us, whoever plays.
I am fascinated by this game. And I think this is one that is going to give us either an incredible game or one of the ugliest games of the year. I don't think there's going to be an in-between. I think it's either going to be one of those games that has you on the edge of your seat, or one of those games that even after you win it, you feel like you've lost in some way. And I think the Falcons have a really bad taste in their mouth after last weekend, and they're going to want to get that out. They're going to want to prove that they were not the team that showed up in Cleveland. I think that will be just enough motivation to get over the hump here, but I just think this is going to be a close game, and felt that from the beginning. I think the Cowboys still are going to put up the points, so I'm going to go with like 28-27, really narrow victory for the Falcons and staying barely alive in the playoffs before they go take on the Saints. So, all right, RJ.
Where they will probably crush our spirits, but we'll talk about that next week.
Yes, we can't look that far ahead. My soul can only take so much at once. RJ, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you and what you've got going on?
I'm obviously over at bloggingtheboys.com. This is the second best SB Nation site, in my opinion, but BTB is number one. And I'm a huge fan of the Falcoholic. You guys have a great Twitter feed. I love it. Love all the combative nature it's got. So I really am a huge fan. So BTB is my home. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at RJ Ochoa, and I'm behind the scenes for everything we do at Blog on the Boys as well. Good chance that you'll find me doing something over there, having some sort of good time.
Awesome, Gina. Remind our listeners where they can find you, what you've got going on.
Well, before I do that, I'm just going to say you should follow RJ. You should follow Blogging the Boys. You can get all of the inside information on this game. They do a spectacular job over there. Yep. You can find me on Twitter at Gina Thomas, where I am usually posting pictures of my dog and dunking on people. That's basically what I do with my life. And you can find me at The Falcoholic and also on Fox 5. Atlanta on Thursday nights at 7 p.m. on Thursday night kickoff.
Heck yeah. All right.
I just said that exactly like I say it on the show.
You did.
On Thursday night kickoff. It was the same inflection.
Oh, that's awesome. As for me, guys, you can find me on Twitter at FalcoholicDW and, of course, weekly here on the Falcoholic Podcast and my articles at thefalcoholic.com. So for RJ Ochoa of Blogging the Boys, Gina Thomas, this is David Walker. DW, thank you guys for tuning in, and we will talk with you next time. Boys, Gina Thomas, this is David Walker. DW, thank you guys for tuning in, and we will.
Hello, you're listening to Simone de Rochefort, one of the hosts of The Polygon Show. It's a show all about the video games that you'll never have time to play, brought to you by four friends who are just as passionate about food, soft drinks, and TV shows as we are about video games. Every Friday, we bring you a new hour of personal stories, like how we found the best way to play Yakuza 0, or even what happens when you play so much Zelda that you hurt your hands and can't play games anymore. Above all, we just have a really good time talking about the games that we love. Check out the show on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcatcher. You can also find us at Polygon Show on Twitter and send a tweet to say hi. Thanks for listening.